Haynes Assembly backtracks on opening up more area for heliskiing, and the first installment of news project Alaska Water Wars. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Barrett Wilbur. Those stories and more up next. Road closures are cutting off all of Alaska's land connections to the rest of the world. According to Ora Landau with the Alaska Department of Transportation, the Haynes Highway is closed in the Yukon. So is Top of the World Highway near Dawson City. Out of Skagway, the Klondike Highway is closed in British Columbia. The three highways have been closed since early this morning. They're the only channels into Alaska by road. Ice, freezing rain, snow, and fog are making the roads too dangerous to drive, according to Canada's Highways Department. Landau says the biggest impact will be for travelers who find themselves stranded. The Alaska legislature is set to gavel in tomorrow in Juneau, and participants driving down from the interior may be stuck on the way. The highways are also essential for getting fresh food to places like Fairbanks, Landau says. If they remain closed a long time, access to fruits and vegetables would be affected. Southeasterners have less to worry about. Most of their produce is brought in by plane, she says. The Haynes Assembly reversed itself on a decision to open up a new area to heliskiing. The unexpected change adds extra tension to the long simmering debate about expanding the sport's footprint in Haynes. Last week, the Haynes Assembly backtracked on opening a new heliski area. The Assembly approved two parcels of land for heliskiing in December. This week, Assembly member Stephanie Scott wanted to remove one, Area S2 in the Tauquenshaw Mountains. She wanted to add three new parcels.
The reason I want to eliminate S2 is it is an area of high concern to ADF&G. I want to adhere to their recommendations because they are the experts.
The Department of Fish and Game has weighed in on possible heliski areas because of the industry's potential to disrupt mountain goat and denning brown bear habitat. The Assembly voted to remove S2, but tensions flared when it came to opening the other three areas to industry. Fish and Game had ranked them of lower concern.
Since the committee approved of these, since the manager approved of these, I feel like we need to go along with that point of view.
Some members felt just because areas were ranked lower on ADF&G's level of concern, they were still concerning. Assembly member Sean Mady put it this way.
All of the zones are of high concern for ADF&G. Those four are just the least damning of all of them, and gun to their head, those would be the ones they would have to choose.
Member Tom Morfitt concurred.
I'm not going to support this motion because I don't trust Fish and Game when they say these areas are of less concern.
Member Heather Lundy came to the same conclusion for a different reason.
When we heard from the heliski industry, they said that they had used all their skier days, that no one was being turned away, that this wasn't an issue of curtailing an industry.
In the end, the vote to add three new areas failed, 4-2. Sunny Sundberg owns heliski company Southeast Alaska Backcountry Adventures, SEBA. They originally requested the area be open to skiing.
After hearing they had adopted S2, I was hopeful that we were moving beyond some of the old argument and rhetoric that surrounded the heliski map issue. I really wasn't aware that it was going to be back on the table.
S2 is a 174-acre parcel of land at the bottom of a continuous slope already open for skiing, Sundberg says. He sees it as a buffer that would make his clients safer.
Our guest safety is actually not as important as potential disturbance of wildlife. And I guess that is upsetting.
According to Fish and Game, S2 is a site of special concern, and opening it is likely to disturb mountain goats and potentially bears. The Assembly did seem to agree on one thing. It was a good idea to get the heliski industry and the Department of Fish and Game to talk face-to-face about creating a map that will work for wildlife and skiers. Assembly member Lundy was optimistic.
We're in a really good position right now with ADF&G working with the heliski operators to potentially come up with a lot more area that they can ski and use without impacting the natural environment. And I'm really hopeful that that's going to happen.
though no details have been formalized. Sunny Sundberg says the heli-ski industry is open to a meeting, too. They also want to find a balance to protect natural resources, he says. Their business depends on it. The borough has been wrestling with whether to open more places, and which places, for heli-skiing for more than a year and a half. So far, only one area in the Porcupine region is on its way to being opened. In Haines, I'm Barrett Wilbur.
This is Alaska Water Wars, sharing the stories of Alaska Native people and the prospect of large natural resource development projects coming to their homelands. This five-part series focuses on the Pebble Mine project near Bristol Bay. Dacia Eaton reports.
Copper is in demand due to industrialization in Asia, and a big mining company is renewing its efforts to develop a deposit in southwest Alaska. Pebble Mine has been in the works for years, but has faced resistance from fishermen, local governments, environmentalists, and tribes worried about impacts to water. The Environmental Protection Agency issued a proposed determination that the mine was too risky to go forward, but after President Trump took office, the EPA settled with Pebble to withdraw its proposal. Surrounded by windswept tundra, lakes, and streams that flow into tributaries leading to Bristol Bay, Pebble Limited Partnership spokesperson Mike Heatwool explains how the state-owned land would change if the copper and gold deposit is developed.
We're standing on what we call the overlook.
So this hill, this high point that we're standing on, this would actually be where the open pit would be?
That's one possibility.
While initial plans by the Pebble Partnership, owned by Canadian mining company Northern Dynasty, have been pared down, they still include a camp, mill, crusher, power plant, tailings pond, and water treatment facilities. Although other big mines are in the works, if permitted and built, Pebble would be the largest in Alaska at nearly 13 square miles.
It's roughly about half of what had been talked about before, and this would be a 20-year mine life for the project.
Alana Hurley leads United Tribes of Bristol Bay, a group formed to fight the project. Hurley is Yupik Alaska Native and lives in Dillingham, about 100 miles southwest of the mine site. She's also a commercial fisherman.
Bristol Bay is the last place on Earth that salmon thrive. We should care about that as a society.
Nearly half of the world's salmon return to spawn in rivers and streams that flow into Bristol Bay. Those waters support a $1.5 billion commercial fishery. Indigenous Alaskans have fished there for millennia and still do. That's part of the reason the EPA under President Barack Obama in 2014 proposed setting limits on what a mine could do and how big it could be. That's what the EPA could now overturn, possibly making it easier for the mining company to get the permits it wants.
We're excited about this new day, and so we're going into permitting with a much smaller project.
That's Pebble Partnership CEO Tom Collier. He says the company also no longer plans to use cyanide to get the last bits of gold out.
The community was adamant that they didn't want the risk of cyanide in Bristol Bay, so we're not going to do it.
Matt Newman, an attorney with the Native American Rights Fund, says the potential for damage to valuable waterways remains high.
You're going to affect water flow. You're going to affect water temperature. You're going to affect turbidity. All of those natural occurrences that allow salmon to continue doing what they've so successfully done in Bristol Bay.
While the EPA's watershed assessment supports such concerns, Pebble officials say they should be investigated during permitting. Many tribes worry if the mine is developed, it could operate longer than 20 years and grow much larger, triggering development of more mines. And what Northern Dynasty CEO Ron Thiessen said during a presentation at the Denver Gold Forum this past September doesn't allay their fears.
This project, it's a multi-generational opportunity. Its size and scale will lead to a very, very long life mine.
Pebble's spokesperson says any expansion of mining would be contingent on a proven track record. In Anchorage, I'm Dacia Eaton.
Next time on Alaska Water Wars, hear from the CEO of the Pebble Partnership who is pushing to get permits for what would be Alaska's largest mine.
And I thought it was just a colossal abuse of process. And we began a very elaborate, multi-pronged strategy to convince EPA that that was a mistake.
Alaska Water Wars is a multimedia project produced by reporter Daisha Eaton and photographer Brian Adams. Funding for this project comes from the Alaska Humanities Forum in partnership with KMBA and Kewaunee Broadcast Corporation. Learn more at alaskawaterwars.org or kmba.org.